Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trades, graphic novels, hardcovers, and other collected editions as sold through Diamond to retailers for July 2013. Now, looking at the breakdown of the top 300 trades, unsurprisingly, DC on top by units with 30.22% of the total units for the top 300 trades. Marvel not that far behind with 27.65% of the total units, and then Image with 14.08%. Dark Horse with a pretty good 8.74%, IDW with 5.3%, and then from there it gets down to, you know, under 2.5%. Look at it by dollars. DC did 34.97%. Compared to Marvel's 29.54%, so, you know, 5-point difference there. Or only a 5-point, or 5 percentage point difference there compared to, well, I guess it's more than the 3 on the unit side. But then Image did 10.49% of the total dollars for the top 300, and Dark Horse just a little above 7, and IDW just a little below 7% and stuff. So, again, we've got the major players pretty much where you would expect them to be. Still plenty of other publishers on the breakdown and stuff, which, you know, is par for the course. We see this usually pretty much every month.
One of the things, John, that I always look over, and we don't really go over it often enough, but on the right-hand side, you know, we do our little baseball category with league players and minor league players in the farm team. And just to recap, our major, of course, is Marvel and DC. Minor is Boom, Dark Horse, Dynamite, IDW, and Image, and then the farm is all the rest, including like Bongo, Broadsword, Cartoon Books, Devil's Due, if they're even in business these days, Fantagraphics.
I haven't cleaned the list up in quite some time, obviously.
But here's my question, and I think this is going to be one to look for on two fronts. Number one, Dynamite. Are they even a minor player, or should they be moved down to the farm team? And number two, as far as a minor league studio, and that would be Boom Studios, do you think they're going to get a little bit bigger with the acquisition of Arkea? It's Arkea, right?
Yeah. Arkea Studio Press. Let's start with the first question of Dynamite, but don't let me forget about the Boom one, because that's a great question too. I think Dynamite is definitely a minor league player. And again, these are just kind of how I think of the different levels of publishers, because they're really playing by different rules, the same game, but by very different rules and in a different way. I think there's no question in anyone's mind that Marvel and DC, they're part of huge corporate conglomerates, have been for years, different ones at times, you know, with Marvel having switched to Disney, et cetera, et cetera. But just the amount of material they come out with, the volume of sales they do, that allows them to get certain economies of scale that other publishers can't get, etc. So, I mean, to me, those are clearly in that category. Now, an argument could be made that if you were to look at the mass market sales, that maybe Archie should be in that group too.
Right.
But we're looking at the direct market sales, and in the direct market, unfortunately, Archie isn't there, you know, at this point. Now, in that minor league, again, I've got kind of the other publishers, you know, Dark Horse, IDW, and Image, the other premier publishers, Dynamite and Boom. Now, what all these guys have in common is they've got just a bunch of different titles. For the most part, they don't really have a cohesive, you know, universe in the same way you've got the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe. So, Dynamite, I think, well, again, like Boom and like Dark Horse and like IDW and like Image, although a little less so with Image, tend to divide out into, you know, creator-owned, licensed properties. Sometimes you've got a kid's line as well. Certainly Boom's doing very well with that these days. Dynamite, not so much on the kid's line, but again, they've got their creator-owned, they've got their licensed stuff, and I would go with the public domain characters and kind of the vintage characters as another kind of segment of their lineup. Whereas the farm teams, by and large, these publishers are only going to have, you know, a handful of titles. If they've got more than a half a dozen, that's kind of unusual. Zenoscope would be an exception in this case. Avatar would be too. But by and large, you're talking about more or less mom-and-pop kind of publishing houses, in some cases almost literally. I mean, Abstract Studios, Cartoon Books, some of these over the years have been basically you got a creator, you got, you know, a spouse or somebody else helping out on the business side, and that's the company.
Like Tomorrow's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. I would put, you know, Red 5, I put it in the farm team. It's acting a little bit more like a minor league publisher, but again, on a smaller scale. And there's, I want to be clear that there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because frankly, I mean, Red 5 Comics is, you know, one of my favorite publishers and one I've got a lot of respect for, as is Big Dog Inc. and a few others, that they're just, they've got a smaller lineup of titles, they're a bit more focused, they're essentially the equivalent of one editorial office at Marvel or DC or somewhere. And by having that, they're able to kind of get their arms around the entire publishing line a lot easier, keep the quality consistent, and if you like one, you may like the other stuff, unless it's a genre you don't like. But quality-wise, they're able to keep it all in at an even keel. Again, this is something I think Valiant's been doing exceedingly well.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, to me, Dynamite is firmly in that minor league camp, but I think it's slipping or at the risk of slipping.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way they've been handling their licensed properties in some cases has been lackluster at best.
Their publishing has been sporadic, you know, getting everything out on time. And they do have really good stuff, and they've got good content. They've got great comics, and they certainly pull in great creators like Alex Ross and everybody. But for some reason, it's just it. You know, the scheduling, it just gets messed up, and comics fall by the wayside. They get properties and they lose them, and you sometimes have to scratch your head about what's going on over there.
It seems like they don't have a firm hand on the rudder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little, I don't say directionless in terms of a whole company, but in terms of where, like, the Green Hornet line is going, or where some of the other stuff is going. What's going on with the Bionic Man franchise, or some of that stuff.
Well, even Lone Ranger. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
You know, you expect these titles to come out every month or every other month, and they're not, even.
Exactly. I was just going to say, if you could get the stuff out every month and give it some consistency and quality and timeliness and predictability on that, that would build up some momentum. That would certainly help.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll start on stuff, and then it just kind of fades away, and then it comes back. The Kirby Genesis line, where it took forever to get that final issue out of one of those miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that may be part of the fault of the creators. It may not be. I don't know. I don't care. As a reader, I find it annoying. And I think the Dynamite we have right now, you're right, they're doing some great stuff here and there. They're also doing some pedestrian stuff in places. But it's a far cry from the Dynamite I think we had maybe 5 years ago. There was a point where it was just knocking stuff out of the park, left, right, and center. And I don't feel it's doing that these days. Now, Boom Studios, on the other hand, I think they have gone through a period or two of not instability, but uncertainty and directionlessness, particularly after, I think, Wade left. But I think they are potentially on the verge of, I don't say making a comeback, but kind of moving up to that next level, whatever it may be. And I don't mean up to the major leagues, but I mean up to where, I mean, they're the lowest selling or the lowest comics grossing of the five minor league ones I've got in here. If again, Boom, Dark Horse, Dynamite, IDW, and Image. I think they have the potential of really moving up. They've got a really strong kids line right now. They've got some really good licensed properties. They've got some really good creator-owned properties. And I go back to what I was talking about after Comic-Con, where that panel there, instead of just saying, here's what's going to be in previews for the next couple of months, they sold me, and I would hope a lot of the other people in the room at the time, on Boom Studios as a company, and their mm-hmm. publishing philosophy and how they treat creators. That, I think, was not only a smart move, the timing was great. there's a lot of buzz right now and has been for a couple of months on, you know, oh, was DC treating creators right or not and stuff like that. And for Boom to have snagged up George Perez and seemingly made him very, very happy, you know, which, you know, on the one hand, frankly, doesn't seem that hard. But again, DC had botched it so badly, he was very despondent, it looked like.
Right.
So I think with the acquisition of Arkea, that's certainly going to help their bottom line. But frankly, Arkea, it's a big library of material, but they too have kind of mishandled some things in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They've started some properties, didn't get it all the way out. I think they may have even burned some bridges with some creators and stuff.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, I've just been to a number of different conventions, and every, like, for instance, whenever I go to C2E2, they always have a really nice display right there, front and center. And it rivals, you know, other publishers like Dark Horse or IDW even, or Image. It's just a really nice display where the creators are easily accessible by fans.
Well, I think both Boom and Arkea have similar enough philosophies and strong libraries. It's just a question of can they merge them into a successful, you know, blend or whatever, or keep Arkea as a separate imprint, whatever. But if they can get some of the properties that have you know, fallen off the rails in terms of schedule and things like that, and get that kind of going full steam, both for Arkea and for Boom,
mm-hmm.
That'd be great, because I think it would be nice to see them be a much stronger publisher. They've been around long enough that I've been always hoping for them to kind of hit that next plateau, that next level, and they've never really stumbled or fallen. They've had a few times where their lineup of properties dries up a little. You know, like when they lost the Disney stuff over at Boom. But, you know, it's one of those things that just adding Arkea is not going to suddenly, you know, increase their total dollars and stuff by so much to say, oh, well, now they're even bigger than so-and-so or whatever. But it seems like a smart move, and like I said, I think the focusing on what Boom Studios means, now's the right time to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to market themselves as well as their titles and their creators, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have the right mindset, and I came out of San Diego really hoping they could make a go of it, and found that was much more exciting to me than even when they'd come out with some of the previous announcements in past years, like the Stan Lee line or, you know, Incorruptible, Irredeemable, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because those were always focused on just a handful of titles, you know, two or three or whatever, whereas this seems to be more a taking stock and reasserting who they are, who they want to be.
Yeah, and a few weeks ago, it was just shortly after our last conversation for the June numbers, the solicitations came out. And I think they may have been the first solicitations to have them both under one umbrella. And it was a little bit confusing because they listed the Boom titles, and then they listed the Arkea titles, and I didn't really know if it was going to be, you know, two separate under one name or how they were going to do that. But looking further at the solicitations, it does look that it's all going to be labeled under Boom and not like a Boom Arkea split.
That makes sense. I mean, mm-hmm. I can see doing it as an imprint, just like they're doing the Kaboom Kids or whatever.
Yes, I think that's how they're going to do it. Keep it separate but equal kind of thing, or maybe separate, you know, so not to confuse anybody in the short term.
You know, as long as they get the titles out and do a good job with it, I really don't think people are going to care that much.
Mm-hmm.
But I had thought with the September stuff that Arkea was still separate in previews.
Well, I was just looking at the solicitation as it came through the Comics List website.
Okay.
And it was the PR, you know, they send, it was like Comic Book Resources, Comics List, Newsarama, how they send them out digitally for the web page,
right,
and maybe
right.
Not so much for the printed page.
Based on what I'm seeing in the consumer order form, I'm expecting Arkea Entertainment to still have its section on page 252,
mm-hmm.
and then Boom to show up a little bit later in the catalog around page 283.
Mm-hmm.
So, given the way the solicitation cycles work and stuff, it just may be that it takes another month or so for them to really kind of get that integrated and finagled.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, it comes down to, you know, getting good books out there and, you know, energizing the fan base and stuff. And I think they're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
I think they're moving in an upward direction, at least creatively and PR-wise. Hopefully sales will follow. Whereas I feel some of the other publishers, again, I think Dynamite's at risk of stumbling. And to a degree, I hate to say it, but I think DC is too. You know, I'm finding as I'm going through the solicits the last couple of months, the solicits from both Marvel and DC are not really exciting me that much.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's less a reflection of the quality of the material than the quality of the solicitation of the material.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's getting to where, certainly with Marvel, Image, and a little less so with DC, it's almost bullet point solicitations. And how you solicit a trade versus how you solicit a monthly book is, I think, should be very different. Because to a degree with the trade, you could just say, well, it collects issues thus and so, it's got this story arc, and you're good. You know, with an issue, you're selling a chapter of a story in most cases, and it makes it fundamentally more difficult to sell just that chapter without giving away the results of the previous couple of chapters.
Well, you bring up a good point. This is one of the questions I was going to ask you.
Okay.
And I'm going off by your top comics here on the spreadsheet. And as I separate DC and the previous issue being number 21, I am looking at 33 comics listed here with a number 21 for the previous issue.
All right.
Now, we started out with 52 2 years ago, and now we're down to 33. Does that surprise you that so many titles, nearly 20 titles, have fallen by the wayside here since the original inception of 52?
They're at the point where they still have 60% of the original line going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that surprise me? Yes, but I don't think it does so in the direction you may be expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I, frankly, probably would have expected a higher turnover rate. We're in a very churn-based market where titles, if it doesn't sell after a couple issues, it's over by issue 7 or 8. We saw that as early as Static Shock, Mr. Terrific, and a few others.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
well, a couple of these are going away. We know Legion is going away. We know Demon Knights are going away. So it's,
yes,
the numbers are still dwindling on these original 52 every month, it seems.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you've got to expect that,
right?
And
right,
not all of these died because of sales reasons. Some of them they decided just to end and replace.
Mm-hmm.
Among those, I mean, there haven't been that many, but you know, Batman Incorporated from one of the later runs is one of those. Justice League International was certainly one of those. I mean, frankly, yes.
Batman and Robin, we don't know what the fate of that will eventually be, you know.
From what I'm seeing, it's going to go for another 5-issue arc with Two-Face as the and character, then Carrie Kelly.
All right.
I don't know who the other three are going to be. I don't think there's any reason to expect it to go away.
Mm-hmm. I read a rumor that something may happen to Nightwing. I don't know about the book, you know.
I've been seeing a lot of speculation that he's going to get killed off in the Forever Evil.
Yeah.
And I have slightly mixed feelings about that.
I have strong feelings. I will be really upset if they kill him off. But he's Dick Grayson, and he won't be gone for long. You know, I don't think so.
I think if they kill him, he will be gone for a while.
You think so? Oh, that would suck.
And I'm very much against that. He's one of my favorite characters out there.
One of my all-time favorite characters, yes.
So I would be very disappointed if they do that. But to me, they'd be doing it for all the wrong reasons. It seems like they're doing it more for the shock value of, oh, we've got to kill somebody or whatever.
Well, and they just killed Damian, and it's like, oh my God, you know, how many Robins can they kill kind of thing.
Well, and they've already killed Jason Todd in the past twice.
Yeah, but they're bringing back Carrie Kelly.
Wow. Throw us a curve. Bring back spoiler. Stephanie Brown is Robin.
Oh, I would love that. Would that be great?
There's a lot of things they could do.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, though, that they need to be telling good, solid stories. And if the way to generate interest is to kill off a character, throw multiple covers on it, or some other gimmick like that,
yeah,
they've already lost the battle, so to speak. You know, it needs to be based on the story.
That leads me to another question. I know we have to get to the top trades, but I've got a very important question, and I was I mentioned this in my own podcast, but it has to do with another gimmick. It could be called a gimmick, and that is the new Sandman Overture coming out, which is a prelude to, which is of course Overture, prelude to the Sandman series by Neil Gaiman. Now Neil Gaiman is doing this series, and there has been Sandman in the past 10 years, but it's the first time in 10 years that he has gone back to his original character. Do you think there is more pressure on Gaiman for his own character as opposed to the pressure there was with before Watchmen and that iconic comic of the 1980s?
Oh, totally, totally.
Yeah.
First off, I wouldn't consider Sandman Overture a gimmick.
Okay.
I would consider Sandman Overture Special Edition a gimmick.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. The one that comes the month after.
Yeah, they're putting the issue out, and for those who don't know it, because I just learned about this, you get issue one 1 month, then the next month they're going to solicit the special edition, which has, you know, bonus interviews, the DVD extra stuff. And it's going to be like $5.99 or something outrageous.
Yeah.
So I think they're dipping a little, you know, deep into the well there. Is there more pressure on Gaiman for this? Certainly. He's got to live up to not only the brilliant work he did, but all of the additional brilliance that's been heaped onto it in retrospect.
Right.
You know, whereas with the Before Watchmen stuff, people were curious, people were interested, but there was also a certain skepticism of, you know, why are they doing that? It can't possibly be as good as the original. It's not being done by Alan Moore.
Yeah.
They were not expected to hit the same high bar. And the fact they told really good stories and it seems to have panned out well, so much the better. But I think with Sandman Overture, the bar is clearly set at a high level, and it's going to be easy for people to be disappointed because of that expectation.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said, yeah. Now, there's another aspect to this, and it's pure speculation, and it's kind of a three-parter. When it comes out in October, do you expect Sandman Overture number one to be the number one selling book? And I suppose it would be in the comic section. And with that, later on in 2014, I speculated that it'll be nominated for an Eisner, at least one. And I'm guessing either from, like, it'll be nominated from 1 to 4 Eisners, you know, best, you know, writer, best limited series, you know, that sort of thing. And I speculated that if it's nominated for at least 4, it'll probably win at least one or two. At least.
J.H. Williams is doing the art.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I think 4 Eisner nominations seems low.
Okay. So, right off the bat, I mean, it's like, you know, picking Spielberg for an Oscar. You know, you know he's going to be nominated. It's just a matter of if he's going to win and how many times.
Yeah. I mean, it also comes down to, you know, hopefully the quality of the material. Does it really pan out or not? I think odds are high that it will. I would have higher odds on that if Karen Berger was still editor at Vertigo.
Okay.
No disrespect to the current editor, you know, editorial staff there and stuff, but she just so consistently knocked it out of the park with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there were a lot of misses at Vertigo over the years too, don't get me wrong. But even some of those I really enjoyed. She just, as an editor, seemed to have a knack of getting the best out of people. And the current editorial team hasn't had the time to build up that kind of a track record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this could be one of the early steps in doing so. You know, I hope they have tons of success with this. But, yeah, I think it's a given that it's on the short list for Eisner nominations, sight unseen.
Yeah, sight unseen, right.
As for will it top the list, we're going to have Forever Evil going on. We're going to have, I think, the tail end of Infinity still going on. It's certainly going to be in the top 10, probably the top 5. It easily could top the list. I don't think it's a sure thing.
Okay.
But if it does, it wouldn't surprise me either.
I'll wait for the absolute.
You may be waiting a little while.
That's all right. I'll wait for it. It'll match my other ones that I have on my shelf.
I tell you, though, they do an absolute of that Astro City stuff. I'll be in line for that.
Well, I would hope they would do something, you know. They're you know, with the old material too. You know, they have the trade paperbacks, but I hope that they bring out nice hardcovers of the previous, what is it, 60 issues?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something that doing a annotated guide or some deluxe edition of, I again, I'm loving the series.
Mm-hmm.
So
It was good, and I read that issue too that you so highly regarded, and it was good.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was very interesting. It was not what I was expecting. Especially, it was so different from number one.
Yeah.
I mean, it was totally, you know, went from a setting up the whole story to this woman that works essentially for a secret organization kind of thing. So I thought it was pretty cool the way they did it.
I thought it was a great, great issue.
Mm-hmm.
Then I read number three.
I haven't read an issue. Didn't that just come out?
It just came out.
Today?
Not today.
Today, last week?
Two weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. I haven't read it yet, so I have to read it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, Kurt Busiek, when he's at the top of his form, he is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And this, if anyone hasn't read it, go find the trades. Go read those.
Mm-hmm.
It is so worth doing. Just out of curiosity, I didn't think to check. Did any of those pop up on the list this time around? You would think with the series having just started up, they might have.
Oh, for the old trades?
Yeah, I'm not seeing
any. They may be out of print. Or no, they reprinted one or two of them a couple years ago. Maybe a year ago, 2 years ago?
This would have been the right month to have had those out.
I know.
Do kind of a push on that.
Well, there's your editorial in Vertigo. You know, gotta get them out.
Yeah.
So, all right, you want to move on along to the top 10 here?
Yeah. Now, topping the list is Hawkeye Volume 2, trade paperback, 9,064 estimated units. And for the top of the trades list, that's impressive just in and of itself. But also the fact that Hawkeye is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the first volume has another 2,307 units on the list down at rank 33, putting it at 17,604 total known reported units so far. So, strong book. Over on the monthly side, you know, that's a book that's just chugging along. I mean, it started at 53,073 units, lost a ton of that on the first issue, down to 33,561 on the second, and then kind of drifted down a little bit, bouncing around to a low point of, actually it went up a little with three, down a little, and up a little, and down a little. So the low point was actually in issue 6 with 33,438 units. But since then, it's been pretty much climbing up the list with the post-number one high point of being issue 10 at 42,089, and then kind of stabilizing around, you know, the mid-40,000s, mid to high up 40,000s.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you ignore that initial drop between the first and second issue, you know, it had, again, a little bump, then dropped down, but then it's been more or less climbing steadily, and I think that's a really good sign. Because the one trend that is common between the 2003 Hawkeye series, Hawkeye and Mockingbird, and the Hawkeye Blindspot miniseries is they pretty much just tumbled straight down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the curves on those sales were pretty sharp and just never recovered. So the fact that they've hit it out of the park with this one and it's growing is a really good sign.
Yeah, it seems to be a fan favorite. Everybody talks about it. Everybody blogs about it. And, you know, I think I'm reading it. I think it's a pretty fun story. It's not the greatest art. It's that cartoonish art. But, you know, it's still pretty fun. I like it.
I think what's really making it work and why people are so much abuzz about it is the done-in-one nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the course of, you know, 12 issues, we've gotten 12 stories.
Mm-hmm.
We're not getting most of one or part of two or, you know, whatever. It feels like a lot more has happened in that series than happens in most other books at the same time.
Yeah. If you read did you read the annual?
Yes. Yes, I did.
The annual does kind of kick back a little bit to a couple of the stories, but, you know, keeps it in line just to keep the annual on pace, which is good. Mm-hmm. I like the annual.
I was very pleasantly surprised by the Pizza Dog issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was not one I was expecting great things out of. I'm like, really, this is where you're going? It's like, all right, I'll get it. But excellent issue.
Yeah.
Next up on the list is Avatar The Last Airbender, Volume 5. This is Part 2 of the Search storyline. It's trade paperback. It did 7,655 units. And I believe all of the other Avatar The Last Airbender trades are on the list. Yeah, we've got Volume 4 down at rank 126 with 1,002 reorder units, putting its known total at 11,551 units. We've got Volume 3 down at 279 with another 532 units, putting its known total at 11,561 units, only about 10 units off from issue 4, or Volume 4, that's interesting. Volume 3 is part 3 of The Promise, Volume 4 was part 1 of The Search, Volume 2 is part 2 of The Promise, and it did another 513 units for its known total being 13,920, and then that first volume that kind of kicked all this off, another 646 units, putting its known total at 20,623 units. So the property is doing very well for Dark Horse, and this is interesting because I think it kind of straddles the fence between kids' comics, not written down towards kids, but geared towards them. I mean, that's who's watching a lot of the cartoons, although, frankly, I watched them too as an adult and loved them.
All right.
But also, because it's cartoon and stuff, licensed property. So it's kind of, I think, got a nice mix there. And then the animated series Book 1 The Art Of, or whatever, hardcover, 1,516 units for the Legend of Korra stuff. So, you know, that sequel series or whatever seems to be doing well for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to see they're having success with that. I waited for the library edition.
Mm-hmm.
And that collects the three volumes. So once Volume 6, which is Part 3 of The Search, comes out, they'll collect that into a library edition, and I'll pick that up. I don't know why I made that decision. I guess I just wanted the hardcover instead of the trades, or when the trades were being solicited, I was too indecisive.
Yeah, it's nice to have a good hardcover on your shelf, though.
Yeah.
It looked good.
I've got plenty of them. Just got to find the time to read them.
Exactly, right.
Then the next two items, we've got Volume 2 of Saga with 7,329 units. That's reorder activity, putting its known total to 25,354 units. And then right below that is Volume 1. It's been on the list 9 times before. It did another 5,959 units, putting its known total just about a half dozen units above 62,000. That's pretty damn impressive.
I read the first issue of Saga when it came out. I think like the first Wednesday it came out, I picked it up. And it didn't resonate with me whatsoever. And since then, in the past, 12 months or so, everybody's been raving and raving and raving about this. And I have decided that I'm going to go back, probably starting this weekend even, to go back and catch up on Saga. And, you know, I probably won't like the first issue again, but I'm going to force myself to get through it and for the first two trade paperbacks and just kind of see what the whole buzz is about. And I think I'll be better for it.
I think that's totally worth doing.
Yeah.
I like it. I enjoy it. I certainly think Fiona Staples' art's, great. The story is interesting. It's certainly different. It's a space fantasy sort of a thing. It's unique compared to what else is on the rack, and I think that certainly helps it.
Yeah.
Do I think it's... While I really like it, I don't have quite the personal buzz on it that I think half the internet seems to. I think it's really good. I don't think it's necessarily the best thing ever done or something.
Well, I was at the dentist's office Saturday, John, and I picked up the Time magazine, and it was one of the latest Time magazine from a few weeks ago that had the picture of the Detroit bankruptcy on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just kind of sitting there, and that's what drew me to the Time magazine. Was I see downtown Detroit on the cover. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll see what they have to say. And I read the article, and I'm flipping through it, and I get to the back of Time magazine, and here's this article about Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples and Saga. And I'm like, wow, okay. If Time magazine is picking this up, and I know that's pathetic on my part being a comic book, nerd, that I haven't picked it up, but Time magazine is. So that was kind of like a kick in the pants to, all right, let's get through this thing. At least the first two story arcs,
Well, I think doing a smart thing by taking a little bit of a hiatus between story arcs to kind of recharge their batteries, make sure they stay on schedule, and do it that way, but keeping the numbering going.
Well, and you know what's interesting, that and this is very much towards Kirkman, and that is that Brian K. Vaughan was quoted in the article saying this is something he wants to write for the rest of his life. And so it's going to have that Kirkman feel to it, that Walking Dead feel, where it could go on for 400 issues.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you're right. You just alluded to that. Vaughn doesn't need to do this every single month if he's going to do this for the next 30 years. He can take time off and revisit the characters, much like Busick's doing with Astro City, even.
I wouldn't want him to take that much time off.
No. But you understand, it's his property. You know, he wants to do it in his own manner. And, you know, Gaiman, the same way with Sandman, even though he's kind of, other hands have kind of gotten to that cookie jar over the years.
Well, but I think Saga is an important title for Image just because of how successful it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because prior to that, frankly, Walking Dead was an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
Kirkman, you could argue, I don't say got lucky. He's earned the sales he's gotten. But nobody else had been able to replicate that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to see some other titles out there selling very well compared to the other Image titles. You know, Saga, East of West, Jupiter's Legacy has started strong.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fact that Saga is continuing to do so well and doing very well in trade, I mean, 62,000 units for that first trade. There are most Marvel and DC, you know, middle of the road books are never going to accumulate that many sales and trades through the direct market. Maybe they would through the direct or the mass market, but I think I say that just because I've got to cover my bases, because I don't know how stuff is selling in the mass market. But frankly, a lot of the middle-of-the-road titles from Marvel and DC barely get out into the mass market, much less sell big numbers. So Saga is something that, you know, I think these creators could do for the foreseeable future and then some. If they want to, I think that's awesome. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I still go back to comments I made about that first issue, where if they had toned down some of the explicitness of it,
that's what kind of put me off. Yeah.
Well, and you know,
but I'm going to go back. But I have an open mind. I'm going to go back to it. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, no, to me, it's not even a matter of do you have an open mind or not. It's a matter of, you know, so far everything I've read, the birth of the kid. Yes, that had to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the others in that they could have done a little more, you know, off panel or discreetly, without changing the story at all. I mean, yes, it technically would have changed the way the story was told, but it would not have changed the plot, the characterization, or anything fundamental about the story. And if they had gone with that kind of a route and opened this up to more of an all-ages, maybe not, you know, five-year-olds or something, but you know what I mean.
Well,
something to where it's not a mature title.
Right.
This is a drop in the bucket to what the sales could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that they could have easily, you know, opened up to such a much wider audience that it could have not only had an even greater success in the direct market, but could have had that in the mass market, could have easily gotten something that became a TV show, movie, or some such, and really kicked it to that next level of success.
Well, I think this is definitely a high school level book, but yeah, I think they could have even gotten it into the middle schools if it wasn't so explicit.
Do you really think they could get this into high schools?
Oh, I think so. I think, yeah, for maybe not into high school, but a high school level, you know, junior, senior could read this.
And how happy do you think their conservative mother or grandmother would have been?
Probably right. I know.
You know, and that's my only point.
I know.
They cut out a segment of the market they didn't need to. I feel they didn't need to. And the alterations I think it would have taken to the story would have been very minor, would certainly not have changed the overall story or even the characterization, I think, one iota. And again, they could have opened it up to where it could be sitting on high school shelves at the library or something.
Right. Now, what's fascinating to me is we haven't seen a hardcover yet of Saga.
No, we have not.
Not even solicited yet. So I think if it was up my guess, I think they're going to collect volumes 1 and 2 and do a hardcover. That's what I would think.
Yeah, I was going to say that's what I would do. I would follow the Kirkman school of collecting things up.
And did you see who else is following that lead is Valiant. Their first hardcovers are coming out, and they're double trade paperback size hardcovers.
Now, their trade paperbacks tend to be 4 issues, though.
4, 5, yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
A trade at that size is acceptable, I think, but once you start getting a hardcover, I expect there to be more pages between the covers.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of justify that price point. Next thing on the list here is one of those that I frankly don't feel should have been on this list, but it's Black Bolt, Something Inhuman This Way Comes. It's 4,845 units. It was a $7.99 comic book. I read it, I liked it, and I think it reprinted some just fabulous material.
Mm-hmm.
But it was comic book size and shape and binding and so forth, so putting it on this list, it doesn't really matter either way, but that's one that, if it had been on the other list, on the comic side, I would have made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, this was an interesting choice. I mean, obviously they're gearing up for, you know, what's going on in Infinity now, and mm-hmm. Black Bolt is kind of coming to the forefront again. I'm reading the Inhumans Masterworks right now. I read volume 1. I'm probably going to finish up volume 2 tonight after we get off the phone. It's just an odd mix of, you know, it's like they're collecting half of Masterworks volume 1. You know, in the $7.99 book, it's just an odd collection, I thought.
But doing it at that price point, I think, opens it up to a lot of people that wouldn't want to plunk the money down for a hardcover or something.
No, you're right. But what's interesting is it's like Black Bolt solo too. You know, you do have the Inhumans, but this is when he kind of lost his memory and is in the streets of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So it's a pretty cool story. You know, it's. Yeah, and the Inhumans are looking for him and everything. It's very a sign of the times of early 70s, angst against the government and profiling, and which kind of what Roy Thomas was famous for in a lot of the books back then.
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, Iron Fist or Luke Cage or other characters, even Spider-Man and Nova, you know.
It was definitely a product of its time, but it was, frankly, a really great time for comics.
Oh, it was great. Oh, I loved it. The art is great. Yeah.
So, bouncing down a little bit further, we had two more of the Before Watchmen deluxe hardcovers. We had the Comedian Rorschach at rank 8 with 4,443 units. And down at rank 10, the Night Owl Dr. Manhattan one, 4,076 units. It's going to be interesting to see how these do long term.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Watchmen has been just a perennial on the list that if it can add companion books to that, I mean, that would just be amazing for DC. But, you know, is it going to be able to do that or not? And so far with these numbers, I'm not really getting the sense it's going to. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
No, I mean, we've been scrutinizing Before Watchmen before it came out, during its release, and now that we have the hardcovers here, you know, we can scrutinize these too. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, in the months to come, you know, now the deluxe hardcovers are out, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how DC divides them up into trade paperback, and if and when they're going to collect the absolute edition, and to see how they're going to keep on collecting these in different formats throughout the years.
I think in this case it was a mistake to do the deluxe hardcover first.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should have done trade paperbacks.
Like Saga. You know, $9.99 versions like Saga.
Well, something that sits well with the Watchmen trade paperback.
Yeah.
And then do maybe a couple of absolutes or whatever, you know. And then, you know, think about a couple of years from now, 5 years from now, doing the deluxe hardcover. You know, first time in hardcover, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I would have done the trades first is, again, I think those sit on the shelf next to Watchmen well, or would if they were to exist. And really, what we see on the list so often is the Watchmen trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, gear it for the long haul on that. I don't see the hardcovers having that kind of longevity. I could be wrong on that, but I'll be surprised if we see the hardcovers having any kind of perennial sales, whereas once they get into the trades, they I think, have a much better shot of that, just because of the lower price point.
Well, and that's something to keep an eye on, too, is when they do get split up into trades, which, you know, I think we can agree on, they probably will, which one will be reordered more over the other ones, and which one will fall by the wayside, you know? Time will tell on that.
Yeah, yeah.
And if my money's on the Darwin Cook one to, you know, Minutemen and Silk Spectre to stay at the top.
I was going to go with, Minutemen, but there was one... I don't know. It's a tough call.
It's a tough call, yeah.
And again, that's what's going to be interesting. You know, 10 years from now or whatever, we look back at these numbers and, you know, have we seen them stay on the list? How have they sold compared to, you know, to Watchmen itself?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you know, Watchmen showed up on the list again, unsurprisingly, rank 106. Now they're 1,125 units. It's total known reported sales. 258,989 units. Now, total reported estimated sales. I want to be clear on what that means. I take my estimates from all the lists I've got. I aggregate them. Now, in past months, years and years back, when the trade list started, it had the top 10. Well, guess what? Watchmen wasn't always in the top 10. It was still selling. So there are a lot of months it just didn't make the list. But we know it sold. What's interesting is there is an item that's been on this list more often than Watchmen. That's the first volume of Walking Dead's trade paperback.
Oh, I was going to say Killing Joke.
Not this month. I would have to go check. I don't think it's been on as often, but that would be another one up at the list.
Yeah.
Up at the top, yeah. But 100 times on the list before for that first volume of the Walking Dead trade... total known reported sales, 288,263 units. I mean, that right there between those two items is 500,000 units sold.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. You know, because the total sales on any given month for the trade list, like this month, is 377,012 units. So each of those, you know, has sold... better part of what the a month's worth of trade sales these days. I mean, certainly not the entire amount, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
If we start at the bottom of the list, it's the equivalent of... Let's see, that Walking Dead is the equivalent of everything but the top 20.
Right. That's amazing.
And that's just that version of the Walking Dead collection. That same material is in the first hardcover, in the first compendium, you got good material, and it's got legs, and it's got that longevity. That's where you make a ton of money. That's mm-hmm. where you... That's success. I mean, the ton of money is nice, but, I mean, that's what makes The Walking Dead such an anomaly, is that it is continuing to sell, and I don't want to get into any kind of debate of, you know, is it better than Watchmen or not, because they're fundamentally different.
Right.
You know, Watchmen is a complete beginning, middle, and end of a very intricate story, whereas the first volume of The Walking Dead is the opening springboard for this expansive, you know, tale of survival. They do very different things.
Yeah, and it's a whole universe. I mean, Kirkman can go in many, many directions if he wants to.
It's interesting with his writing style, because we're at issue, 115 or something now, I think, just came out. And on the one hand, a lot's happened. On the other hand, you can really break it down to, you know, four major arcs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole bit with the prison, with the governor, the whole bit at the farm before that. Now we've got the town they're in and stuff like that. You could almost argue that really not all that much has happened, because it's been such a steady, continuous stream and flow. Again, I find the title fascinating to look at, just in terms of how it sells and how the story has been told. And it's the benchmark for success these days, really.
Mm-hmm.
But if that saga, you know, first volume, which came out in October of last year, and we're looking here at the July numbers, and it's done 62,000 units, where do you think that's going to be by the time it gets, to 10 years later or whatever, because we're like 9 years after when that first Walking Dead came out.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So give it another 8 years, and the sales we're seeing on Walking Dead trade paperbacks could be dwarfed by Saga, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Or not. You know, maybe it'll cap out. I've often wondered if we're going to get to the point where either Walking Dead or Watchmen, they've just kind of sold what they're going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see that ever happening, but it surprises me that it doesn't just as much.
That it hasn't plateaued at all, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, on the one hand, there's always new readers coming into the markets. So you would expect new interest. But on the other hand, you know, either they found it by now or they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting stuff.
It is still one of the greatest stories ever told, too. I mean, that's why it's so good.
I wouldn't I wouldn't go quite that kind of hyperbole. Greatest story ever told.
Well,
that covers a lot of ground.
No, I know. Top 10, I should say, you know.
I would certainly limit it to within comics.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, top. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
you.
All I'm saying. Yeah. I would say,
to this day, it's like, but it's funny because every year we move farther and farther away from what, 1986, 1985. And it's like, okay, what's the best comics to read? Okay, everything that came out in 1985. You know, it's like, you know, year one, Watchmen, you know, and that kind of thing. And
Dark Knight, you know, yeah.
Dark Knight. We're getting further and further away from that, and we need something more modern to, you know, 25 years from now, what are you going to say? You know, well, probably Walking Dead. It, you know, Saga is a good bet right now. You know, there's some other things too, but, you know, Civil War maybe? I don't know.
No. You know, I guess to me...
off the top of my head. So.
Yeah, yeah, no, I get it and stuff. I would put Fables in the list.
Fables, right, yeah.
Certainly things like Sandman, Preacher, Why the Last Man, things like that.
Anything from Marvel?
None's coming to mind.
None's coming to mind, right.
And I think part of what sets those other things apart is single creative vision, maybe different artists over time, but single writer for a really long run.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to have stories that pay off in and of themselves, yet also do a slow burn on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel has not had any title I can think of where it's been kind of a single creative team doing their own thing in their own little area forever and a day.
Not Hickman's Fantastic Four?
Garth
Ennis' Punisher run?
Didn't read a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's also ultra-violent and ultra-sex and ultra-blood and ultra-swearing, so...
But
not exactly for the mainstream audience.
Yeah. What I would say...
Whereas they do have that in Watchmen, but it's not as explicit as a Garth Ennis comic, I should say.
Yeah, but look at things like Fables, Why the Last Man... But let's go with Fables and Walking Dead as the two good examples.
Yeah.
Okay. Started from scratch, created a world, and ran. And just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with no end of sight for either of those. You take something like Hickman's Fantastic Four. I love that. It's great. It's also built on a history of like 500-600 issues prior to it.
True, right.
Okay, and then when he left, it kind of keeps going, but not quite. You know what I mean?
Franchin's
taking it in a little different direction. It's different. It also intersected with so many other things.
Right.
I mean, to me, it's... Something like Walking Dead and Fables, it's like running a marathon. You point these guys in a direction, they start going, they get to a comfortable pace, and they just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
For any mainstream Marvel DC book, it's more like the guy at the end of the football field who's caught that football, and he's got to get to the other end of that football field. And there are a lot of guys running to go tackle him. Oh, here's a crossover. Boom. Oh, he survived that. He's still got the ball. He's going. Boom, here comes Civil War. He's just gotten dogpiled. He's totally lost momentum. You know, it's a fundamentally different game. That's why I would say there's nothing from Marvel over there in that sort of a thing in my mind.
Right.
But even what I'm finding over at DC is over at Vertigo, not at DC proper.
Not at DC, right.
And Image lends itself to that sort of storytelling. And I think there are other things that on a smaller scale, were equally good, if not better. Sword. I'm trying to think. To a degree, Morning Glories is one of those that they started, yeah, and they've just Morning been Glory. Going.
Yeah.
You know, it all comes down to what you like. You mm-hmm. know, there's good stuff out there everywhere. So we got another volume of Mouse Guard, rank 13. This is volume 3, Black Axe hardcover, 3,852 units. I'm assuming my system did not get all of the sales for the previous volume. I have to imagine it sold more than 329 units.
Yeah.
It may just be how they labeled that one. I've also been trying to go through and clean up the Archaea stuff. That's one that they've used the same publisher code a million times, so I have to manually go clean it up so it doesn't get confused with Archaea.
Right.
Arcana.
Yeah. Archie.
And there's one other it tended to get confused with. I forget what it was. So it could just be as simple as I didn't get all the stuff cleaned for the publisher code.
Shame on you.
I know, I'm slacking. It's hard enough to get the comics list clean. It's next to impossible right now for me to do that also with the trade stuff. Which is,
yeah.
But it's also gotten to where the volume numbers are so low that it's almost not worth doing. I mean, Superman Phantom Zone. What exactly would I compare that to?
Yeah.
But is something on my list of stuff to do to go clean up. It's just a matter of you know, finding the time.
Well, yeah, Phantom Zone would be comparable to, you know, Superman versus Zod, Superman versus Brainiac. You know, I mean, that's, and you know that. I'm kind of preaching to the choir when I say that.
I know that,
that's
but
what
I
it
need
would be.
To
It'd
go
be classic stories versus one other main villain, you know.
Yeah, but I need to go through, like, that DC Entertainment Essential graphic novel and reading chronology.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And then go figure out what order they shipped in so I can do a trending analysis. And, you know, I haven't had the time to go manually key in that data. It's
a lot, man. It's a lot to run a website. It's a lot to do a podcast. It's a lot to do a spreadsheet like this. It's a lot for me to do the release schedule and to live a life. You know, it's tough, man, but
it is. It's fun.
It's fun, but it's consuming.
It's hard to find the time to do all of that. Plus, I read comics.
Well, yeah. What's that? You read comics?
Yeah, just a few. So, yeah.
There's a period for, I think, since we last spoke, I didn't read a comic for, I think, 10 days straight. Or no, it's when I got my new job. When I got my new job in late July, I did not read a comic for about 2 weeks straight. I was just, I mean, and they're right next to me on my bedside table. And
I did
not read anything.
11 days, I think.
Yeah.
I was on the cruise a couple of days before, day after, whatever. So, yeah.
Well, that's different. When you're on vacation, because then you want to turn off and tune out from everything. But,
which
you know,
I did.
Right, which you do. Right. But see, that's what I would love. I read an entire, when I went on my trip to the Turks and Caicos with my wife for our 10-year anniversary, I was there for 5 days, and I read The Essential Nova while I was there, sitting on the beach. And I brought it down with me. I think I probably read a little bit on the plane, read it on the beach, and then I finished it, and I left it there. There's a little bookshelf with other books on there in our hotel room. And I left it there, and I put my name in it and my website, and I said, if anybody picks this up, please contact me, and I'll mention you on my show. And that was 3-4 years ago, and nothing since. So,
People are shy,
I know.
They don't want to reach out.
I would like to think it's still there, you know? So
I would have rather liked to have thought it was read.
Well, no, that's the thing. Somebody please pick this up, you know? So
That's been one of the things on my to-read list for a while.
With The Essential Nova?
Yeah, that whole 25-issue run.
Yeah, it's okay. It is what it is. I mean, you kind of...
That's a product of its time.
Yeah,
but
it's like the Iron Fist or Luke Cage, like I was saying earlier. It is what it is. Or Warlock or something, you know?
But, I mean, you've got to take all of this stuff, particularly the less recent material, and just accept it for what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Is some of this going to seem a little hokey by today's standards? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But some of it, if you can, again, take it for what it is, what it was trying to be, what it was doing, and I don't mean that in the way of making excuses. Well, things were lamer back then. No. accept it, go into it with, going to your earlier comment, with an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to enjoy something, you're much more likely to enjoy it than if it's, well, I know this is lame, but who, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Storytelling styles have radically changed over the decades. Some cases for better, some cases not so much, in my opinion. Everyone's going to have that opinion. We'll probably disagree on what was better and what was worse in some cases. But, you know, I love being able to go get some of this older material and either just for the nostalgia and, you know, the early 80s to me was a heyday for the DC stuff, or, you know, something about the late 70s Marvel really kind of, you know, strikes a chord with me and stuff, and it's something that I haven't dived that deep into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for other people, there's other eras that it's just, wow, that's when things were really firing on all cylinders. And we're getting to the point where now that everything coming out is day and date digital, making collecting it dirt simple for a publisher, I would imagine, mm-hmm. that sooner or later they're going to say, you know, we need to go digging through our archives. We need to go get everything else in print.
Mm-hmm.
Digitally, at least, if not physically in print.
Well, and credit Marvel. They've been doing that a lot more than DC has. I mean,
yes.
I look at the Marvel digital list every week, and, you know, a lot with their new material, they reprint 90s material and 80s material and 70s material and to an extent, some of the Atlas era material. But DC has not done that one bit, you know.
Well, I think Marvel with the Essential program, it was always stronger than the Showcase stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, DC's got a stronger backlist in Vertigo and a lot of other areas, but Marvel has had a stronger reprint policy on more the, I don't say the middle of the road stuff, but not just the most popular things or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Between the DVD collections they did about 10, 15 years ago and whatnot, they've got scans of, you know, every X-Men, Avenger, Captain America, Fantastic Four, and whatever comics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're in a better position to get all this stuff put up digitally. Not to say they're in a perfect position and why don't they just turn the switch or something. But once they can get all that material out there digitally and stuff, and enhancements get made to the readers and whatnot, and the readers we've got now are fine, they're good,
mm-hmm.
but not really geared towards handling, I want to go pick a good story out of the last 40 years of X-Men stuff.
Right.
Or I want to go find every appearance of the Taskmaster and read it in chronological order. Or sort it by artist or writer.
Yeah.
You know, once we get those kinds of functionality and it's easy to just kind of get sucked from one title to another to another to another to another to another.
Yeah.
You know how, like, you can get into Wikipedia and be lost for 3 hours?
Well, I get lost inside in comics.org. And I know you use Comic Database, Comic DB. But I use comics.org. And I literally get lost in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Comic Book DB, I find to be a really good site.
Yeah.
At some point, I want to do a comparison on all of those kinds of websites out there, and just what they offer, what data is there to be had.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are times when, you know, again, the Taskmaster example. Where the hell has he been?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what titles has he been? What issues? There are a lot of ways to find out and then go hunt the issues down.
Well, you can do, yeah, I think both websites, not to get into it.
Well,
in
the Grand Comic Book Database, and I mean, there are other ones out there.
Well, no, that's comics.org is Grand Comic Book Database. Yeah.
Okay, they merged. All right.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. I mean, you can do an advanced query and, you know, delineate by whatever you want to do. But yeah.
Another one I use frequently is Comics Vine or Comic Vine.
Comics Vine is good. Yeah, that's a good one too. Mm-hmm.
So, looking at the price points on these things,
yes.
We had quite a few. Really, the most popular one was the $14.99 price point, I think, at the 55 items on the list. We had 50 items at $24.99, 46 at $19.99, and then a smattering of other prices all over the place. The high this time around was $125. And what was that one?
So that, I know the $95 one was the EC Artist Edition.
The $125 was the Absolute Blackest Night. Which, wow, that took a little while for it to come out. It was only about 2 weeks late, but I, yeah. 972 units for that.
I would love to know if any of our listeners picked up Absolute Blackest Night and can let me know what the reading order of that is, what the table of contents layout of those stories.
I would have
gone
issue 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5, then 6, then 7, then 8.
But didn't it collect a couple of the miniseries, the Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman miniseries too?
Collect free comic book day stuff, Untold Tales of the Blackest Night, and DC Universe Zero.
That's it, okay.
Which seems a little thin.
I thought they had a few other comics. That's why I thought they had the miniseries in there. Okay.
I'd have put the DC Universe Zero...
I don't know
if I'd have put that first or last. I'd have to reread what was in that.
Yeah.
And the Untold Tales I'd put at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't seem to have any of the collected...
Okay. I thought it did. Okay.
Yeah. I could see where that...
I only asked that because I do not have my browser open because I don't want to lose connection again with you, John.
We've had that a few times tonight.
People are like, Chris, you should know that. And I'm like, no, I don't know that.
I just thought I'd give kind of the snarky response of, eight issues and it's not that hard.
I will take it. You know, speaking of old stuff getting reprinted, I see a lot of the archives got reordered. You know, Robin and a couple of Batman and a couple of Superman archives. So good to see those back in the list here.
Yeah.
At the very bottom, but, you know, they did have a lot of reorder activity.
Well, it's one of those things. Sometimes they do these on fire sales. It doesn't necessarily look to be the case here, although, because the retailer ranks seem reasonable. But yeah, sometimes they just, you know, put these things in front of the retailers and say, hey, remember, this still exists. And a lot of it is around more the Batman stuff. Seeing the Supergirl one on there is a little surprising. Really, everything else except for the Supergirl Archives Volume 1, the Justice League Volume 2, Wonder Woman Volume 4, and Superman Volume 2, all of it, the rest is Batman stuff of some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Popular character for some reason. I just don't
think... Very popular, I know.
So what you got coming up on your show these days?
I just interviewed... Well, it was not really an interview, but a conversation with Andy Tom. Andy writes on my blog every Friday, so it was a lot of fun to sit down. I'm trying to sit down with all of my writers, and we might even do a roundtable coming up, John, which you are more than invited to sit in on.
Cool.
And it's not going to be live. We're just going to record it. I would love to do a live show, and maybe we can figure that out one of these days.
Actual live with people calling in?
An actual, well, you know, I just, you know, you can do like a live show and people can listen in or something like that. I don't know, you do it on Ustream or something like that, or a Google Hangout we could do.
I would be game for doing an actual live show.
Yeah.
Where if people have questions about the numbers or something like that, we can answer those. That could be fun.
We'd have to
figure out the technology.
Figure that. I'm sure we could do it. And just people could Skype us, you know, have a Google chat. But I figure we'd have to record it somehow. That's the only thing. And I know you can record Google Hangouts. But is there a way, and this is kind of off topic, but is there a way to grab the Google Hangout and just extract the audio? I'm sure there would be.
I have not really had time to play with
the
Google
I'll look
Hangouts
that
and stuff.
I will look that up.
But at the very least, doing a Q&A session for this stuff could be fun, too, at some point. Yeah, we should figure some of that out. That'd be fun. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's about it. So, oh, and I did a blog post this week regarding kind of like a checklist, kind of like a challenge of 30 things that a 30-day challenge that any old comic book fan could do every day to improve their comic book street cred. And, you know, one of it is like, you know, read a manga book, read a Superman book, or, you know, take some old comics you're never going to read, drop them off at the local children's hospital, you know, kind of really odd and kind of things that you could do you know, read a comic book biography, you know, that kind of thing. You know, just a challenge to expand your horizons and expand your mind.
Well, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. It's easy for people to fall into ruts or into counter-programming, I think is the term I'm going to use. Something where it's, well, you know, that's too popular. I'm looking at this stuff. Look at how you know, cool I am, or whatever. I read indies, or I read Marvel, or, you know,
and
whatever.
Honestly, and going back to what I was talking about, Saga in Time Magazine, one of the things I have on my list is read something or reread, or pick up something you don't think you're going to like and read it. And for me, it was Saga. And when I read that Time Magazine article, I'm like, you know, I really should read this. And I really hated the first issue. But I want to kick myself in the butt, kind of thing. And so that's why that one got put on the list. So I'm going to challenge myself to read the first 12 issues, like it or not, read them all, go in with an open mind, and you know, do that kind of thing, and get out of you know, a routine. So
I try to do that periodically. Drew had talked me into picking up the other issues of East of West and giving that another shot. And again, you know, it's good stuff. It just wasn't something I felt needed to stay on my reading list.
Yeah.
But, you know, I try to keep an open mind on stuff, and, you know, if somebody can talk me into reassessing something or why it's worth another shot or whatever,
I also picked up another thing to really expand my rights, and I thought about getting this, but it's got a lot of mainstream press, and this new March graphic novel from Top Shelf.
It has been getting a lot of press.
From Representative John Lewis, and especially this week because of the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech, you know, by Dr. King. And, you know, John Lewis was there, and now he's got his first book in the trilogy. I did pick that up, so I'm looking forward to reading that. So talk about expanding your horizons. That's a book, and I just flipping through it, the language is there, and that one word is there written prominently, and it's going to be disturbing. You know, it's worth reading, and definitely worth sharing with younger generation too. I can't wait to share it with my kids.
Yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because we saw I took Patrick to go see 42.
I was just thinking about that movie when you were saying that. My sister was telling me about. I have not. My sister was telling me about it.
Yeah, well, there's the one. I mean, obviously the N-word is used prominently in the movie, but there's one particular scene that goes on and on and on when the Dodgers are playing Philadelphia. And
is that the one where Alan Tudyk was the actor?
I think so, yeah.
Because from what my sister was telling me in one of the DVD extras or whatever, or something she'd read maybe, I forget where she got this information, he had apparently gone out the day they were filming in front of the audience, he himself saying, "I am an actor, I am in character, I do not believe any of this stuff."
But, oh, yeah.
You know, this is what was said, you know?
And think about it, John. That was only, it was a fictionalized scene that of one day in that summer. Mm-hmm. I mean, that went on every day where he went, you know? And not... maybe not to that extent from the manager of the opposing team, but it went on from the stands. You know,
it's interesting talking about that, talking about the I Have a Dream speech and stuff, 50th anniversary of that. And we were talking earlier about how storytelling styles have changed. They have had to, because look at how much society has changed.
Oh yeah, right.
You know, the original characters, the Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and stuff that we got back in the World War II days. And how different the world was compared to how it is today and the types of characters we need today for society.
Well, not only African-American characters, but also female characters. Look how stronger the female characters are these days. And it's not just Wonder Woman or Supergirl who, you know, were denigrated. I mean, way back in the day, remember Wonder Woman was the secretary for the JSA back in the 40s.
Well, the very concept of justice, I think, has radically changed.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's evolved, and what it means to be a hero, to stand up for the common man, has radically changed. I would hope, in most cases, for the better. But it's one of those things that, you know, when you're reading some of this older stuff, when you're reading something like March, understanding and appreciating the time it was written in, the world it was written in, and the world you're reading it in today, you know, It can really add to the reading experience if you go in with kind of open eyes and that awareness. And, you know, I think a lot of readers really do that and can pull some great stuff out of older material written in a different style for a different audience for a different time.
And to counter that, if you look back at, you know, the 1940s comics, and in particular The Spirit by Will Eisner, and the way he drew and portrayed Ebony Jones back then, or Ebony White back then.
Yeah.
You know, very different, man. Different era altogether.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. It'd be easy to write off caricatures or things that we would find, frankly, rather offensive today. It's, well, everyone was offensive back then, or that's just the way things were. It's like, oh, yeah, no, it's, you know, it's more complicated than that.
It's more complicated, yeah.
So, but, yeah, I've been trying to kind of, you know, expand my reading a bit into some different areas and some stuff like that. Not, you know, radically. I'm certainly not ditching Marvel or DC or anything of the sort.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always looking for new stuff, and that's part of why I do the preview spotlight. That's part of why I do the previews teleconference. That's part of why I go previews cover to cover.
Yeah.
Just to see what all is out there.
Well, and by all means, I mean, my 30-day challenge is by no means gospel. There are 100 million things you can do to expand your horizons, and mm-hmm. and I welcome those in the comments or tweet out or whatnot. And it's got a lot of traction so far, which is good. As far as one of my most popular blogs, you know, of the year, really, and I just put it out 2 days ago. So yeah, so come by and check it out. I invite the audience to come by and check it out, and you know, put up their own 30-day challenge if they want to. You know,
cool.
It's all stuff you can just share and you know just do. So it's
yeah. pretty cool. Worst case, you find something new to read.
Oh, my God, that'd be terrible.
I know. Well, it could be if you find too much.
Especially in your collection.
Yeah.
So what's going up on your show? Anything new?
Let's see. Just got back from another vacation. So got another weekly spotlight. I got to read a couple of things for. We're going to go over Batman and Nightwing, Cable and X-Force, and Bloodshot. And then it's going to be probably...
was that Bloodshot Zero you're going over?
Bloodshot Zero we're going
yeah.
over,
yes. The Nightwing book was good. Batman Nightwing was... Wow, that was pretty powerful. That was
well,
good.
Now you've set my expectations.
No, I'm just saying it's good. And I've heard good things about Bloodshot Zero, too, so...
I'm looking forward to these. I've been enjoying the titles. So,
yeah.
You know, it's... I try never to pick stuff to review that I know I'm going to wind up slamming.
Yeah, right.
Unless it really needs slamming, and that's rare.
Right.
But there have been things I slammed just because, well, you know, frankly, we picked the wrong issue sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a selection bias. But beyond that, we're going to have a preview spotlight coming up soon. The teleconference will be on September 7th, which is a Saturday.
Saturday night, right?
Makes it easier, I think, for a lot of people to come. We were having some issues with Friday nights.
Oh, yeah, Saturday will be a lot easier.
Well,
I'm sorry.
There is no great time to do some of these things.
I know there's not. Well, my roundtable wants to be on a Saturday or Sunday, the 8th, and I got an email from one of the guys like, it's Sunday night football. I can't make it. And I'm like, oh, geez. So there's no good night, you know?
Yeah. It seems to be working out a little bit better for some people.
Yeah.
So we got that. It'll be another set of numbers coming up soon. This one and the last month were a little late just because of my schedule and stuff. The other thing I want to toss out is I started a thread on the forum the other day. On my trip, I was in Sydney, Canada, and my sister had been walking around town. We were on a shore excursion, whatever, on a cruise ship. And she's like, hey, I want to go find a bookstore or whatever. It's like, okay, fine, I'll go with you. And, oh, by the way, I found a comic store. I'll take you to it. It's like, okay, I'll go. I'd already said yes, but that was, you know, that was the thing that locked the deal. So I went there. It was the local NPC store. And what I do whenever I go to one of these stores is I pick up a business card, just for the heck of it. And I did that, and then a day or two later, we were in Portland, Maine, and we're looking around just to grab a soda, because those things cost a fortune on the ship. You get a little glass for, like, you know, buck and a half or whatever, compared to the same buck and a half you get a 20-ounce bottle or whatever on land.
You get a 2-liter, right.
Yeah. So we're doing that, and we stumble across Casablanca Comics. It's like, well, that was a nice store, actually. That's the kind of store, actually, I think I'd feel comfortable putting a pull list in and shopping at every week if I lived in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked up a business card. And I'm thinking it'd be kind of fun to start a collection of business cards for comic book stores.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
I mean, if listeners could basically, you know, next time they're at their local shop, pick one up and send it my way, I'd appreciate that. Just because, I mean, a couple of reasons. One, I think it'd be cool to do. Two,
that'd be very cool to do.
It'd be useful to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gives a sense of just how many stores are out there. And also, what I'm finding is it often gives a little bit of a sense of the personality of the store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it something that's got a more colorful thing or a style to it or a logo or just blah, I'm a comic store, you know, or whatever. So, like I said, I started a thread there. I scanned in the two comic business cards. Just the front of one, because there was nothing on the back, but the front and back of the other one, because there was stuff there. So people could see it, and if I get more, I'll scan more in and put them up.
I will do that. I will go to my stores and pick some up, yeah.
And I may actually try to get to the local stores here and do that, because I go to them so often, I never think to get cards. I know where they are.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think it'd be fun to start up a collection on that kind of thing.
Awesome.
So anything else? Does that do it?
I think I'm good, man. Thanks a lot, as always.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.